get discussed on this particular technical matter. No guarantee, but the price is right. It is a live forum of people asking questions, usually getting answers from the assembled group of people who have knowledge in various areas. It is not a free technical consultation service in writing. Some people make that mistake of thinking it is. It's a live session, and with normal conversation back and forth, we try to answer each other's questions, but we have not promised to give anyone written answers to their questions. There are a couple of exceptions to that, but not too many. A person signs into the technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. So please give me your call letters and names at this time if you want to check in. K2RIW in the TechNet.
WB2CUK, yes, the name is Bill. Good evening, Dick.
WA2RAS, Jeff. Good evening, Dick.
Okay, Bill with a yes. Mr. RAS, what is your name, sir, and is that a yes for you?
Yes, it is a yes. The name is Jeff, Juliet Echo Foxtrot, Foxtrot.
Yeah, I think you told me that earlier, too. I'm a little bit forgetful. So far, we got Bill and Jeff. Anyone else?
Insu GOT Howard, no.
Yellow Charlie 2, Tango Delta Lima. Name is John, and I'm portable in Massapequa. And no question, I'm just listening.
WS2N, Paul, with a space report, Dick. Good evening.
Okay, Howard and John with a no, Paul with a yes, and I think I hear Joe signing in the background. Go ahead, Joe.
Here's W-H-O-R-Y-Y, Joe, yes, if time permits.
Well, we'll make time for you, Joe. Okay, the yeses so far are Bill, Jeff, and Joe in that order. Anyone else like to sign in? Give me your call letters, name, and the word yes if you've got a question or a comment at this time.
Yeah, good evening all. This is K2KEY.
That was Mel. Anyone else?
And to Mike Bravo.
Moon Bounce. Hey, Barry. Haven't heard from you in a long time. Glad to hear you. And one last call. Anyone else with a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name at this time. Looks like this is the group for now. Hey, Bill, you're number one on the runway. Mr. CUK. Bill's a guy, if you haven't known for the last zillion years, who runs the swap and shop. And so Bill has obviously swapped and shopped some real good equipment he wants to know about. That's a guess on my part. WB2CUK, you got a Bill, K2RIW.
Hi, Dick, good evening, and good evening to the assembled group there. Well, my question is sort of related to stuff you want to pick up in ham radio. It's really a few weeks late because this made the news a couple of weeks ago. Well, for whatever reasons, I wasn't able to get onto the net, or it was too late. And I finally figured I'm going to ask you tonight. This thing with the cell phone that was put on a stove, and when the phone rang, I guess when a cell phone rings, it turns on and sends a signal out to the cell saying it's receiving. And I'm just wondering, they showed that on TV, it actually happening. I wonder what you think the method is that this is happening. Is it the shielding inside the stove? Is the cell phone putting out too much power? And I wonder if that's applicable to any of the amateur little transceivers that we use, such as HTs and stuff like that. Now, I wonder if you have any experience with that and what your thoughts are on it. That's my question for tonight. Now, back to you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask you for a little more detail on this one, Bill. You may know that there's been an urban myth running around on YouTube showing people setting four cell phones down on a table and kernels of unpopped popcorn on the table and turning on the cell phones and the popcorn pops. Pure hogwash. It was a farce, and if you go deep enough into Snopes and other sites that tell you about erroneous things, messages going around, this was done as a joke by these people. And there's three different versions of it. There's versions of it with Asian people, German people, and American people. And they use the exact same table, but they change the brand name on the cell phone and the clothing that the people wear. But that one's a pure farce. Now, if I understand you correctly, a cell phone placed on a modern range or oven or stove changed in some way. I think you're saying that the microprocessor thought it was getting a signal like somebody's pressing the button. So give me a couple more details. I might not have become familiar with this one, Bill. Cell phone on a stove, and what happened when the cell phone went on? K2LRW, back to you, Bill.
Okay, well, this was on a, I think it was a Magic Chef gas stove. And the fellow said he would set the phone right on top of the stove, near where the controls are, and as it would ring, it would ignite the burner in the oven. Now, you know, I have one of these, I have an electric stove, but the buttons are all push buttons, it's digital, and anyone knows digital circuits, if you feed the RF into them, can knock them crazy, make them run fast or slow, and, you know, just basically, you can do a lot to digital circuits if they're not shielded. And I'm wondering if that's what this cell phone did. They actually showed it on TV that the phone rang, and then the oven turned on. So I'm wondering, when the phone turns on, does that mean it's transmitting to the cell? I guess it does when it rings. But I think it's, unless the guy pulled a real magic trick in front of TV, I think this was for real, and he said that the stove manufacturer needed a some kind of a filter that they needed. I think it's more like a shield, but when you're dealing with the general public, you just say, oh, a filter or something like that. But I wonder what your thoughts are on it.
Okay, as you do more research about how a cell phone works, you realize that it's doing an awful lot of transmitting at times you think it is not. When the thing is in the on mode, ready to receive a message, and it's in your pocket, so to speak, it does periodically transmit a very quick burst of signal saying, here I am. In other words, as you travel around, the whole system of cell phones, the whole cell phone base station system has to know where you're located, so it knows where to through which base station it must direct the call when somebody is calling you. So periodically it's giving a quick burst. When a call is initiated to you, then not only does it know where you're located, does it know which antenna of that particular cell site to start transmitting to, there's a whole handshake procedure that goes back and forth between your cell phone and the base station, and it eventually becomes a full duplex transmitter receiver system. During the actual phone call itself, it is essentially doing continuous transmission and continuous reception through the same antenna. The duplexing filter that you've got on a repeater site, there is a miniature version of that located inside of your cell phone. It's a rather amazing piece of electronics, how you could fit four or six cavity duplexing filter inside of such a small package. So it is transmitting and receiving, and it is a power-managed system. Most of the protocols, multiple times per second, as many as 700 times per second, it makes a judgment as to how strong is the signal it is hearing from your cell phone, and it's giving commands in the downlink. There's a downlink and an uplink. It's giving continuous set of commands in the downlink, telling your cell phone to go up a little bit or down a little bit in power, so that there's reasonable signal-to-noise ratio between you and the cell site, but it's not overpowering such that it has the ability to reuse that frequency one or two cell sites away. So there's a lot of signals going back and forth. So depending on how far you are from the cell site, it could be transmitting as little as a few microwatts of power all the way up to quite a few milliwatts of power, maybe a few hundred milliwatts of power. Now, when that cell phone itself, while it's transmitting, if it was located close enough to a sufficiently susceptible microprocessor system, it is possible for the microprocessor system to pick up enough RF energy from your cell phone to think that you have pressed a particular button and therefore or ordered the oven to turn on. This is a speculation on my part. Every piece of electronics has some level of susceptibility. Does it take a milliwatt, a microwatt, or a kilowatt of power nearby where it will be disrupted or changed in some way? Every piece of electronics, if it's not extremely well shielded, will pick up enough of the RF energy, rectify it, and it thinks that a signal has been placed on that line. A 1 becomes a 0, or 0 becomes a 1, if you know what I mean. So I am speculating that's what could be happening if this is not another one of those urban myths. If the Magic Chef stove really has that susceptibility. I wonder if anyone else on frequency has further information about what Bill is bringing to our attention, please give us your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW in the TechNet. Looks like there's no one. There appears to be. Okay. Let me let the machine drop long enough in case there's somebody from an outer area who wants to sign in. Apparently not. Where did you first come across this particular piece of information, Bill? Was it a radio program, television program, newspaper? How long ago? And tell us, from the way it was presented to you, does it appear it could be another one of those urban myths like the popping corn with a set of cell phones? Or do you have reason to believe that this could really be real? If it is real, I'm a little bit amazed that Magic Chef would devise an oven that is that susceptible. The signal that comes out of a cell phone, by ham radio standards, is an extremely weak signal, because the cell site itself is never more than a couple of miles away, so you never need more than a couple of miles of communication, whereas a handy talkie that you and I use could easily run 5 watts. I don't think there's any cell phones that go above 300 milliwatts, but I'm not sure about that one. How about KBU, Bill? WV2CUK, K2RIW. Fun subject.
Yeah, this is on, I think, Channel 4, and I think the only other channel I watch is Channel 2 in the evening. It's about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago, I think about 2 weeks ago, and they actually had a news guy there at the house with the cell phone laying on top of the stove, and the phone rang, and you seen the oven turn on. Now, unless it was some kind of hocus-pocus guy with a remote control hidden in the house doing it, which I kind of doubt that you could do that, it seemed pretty accurate. And I'll tell you, I'm very skeptical about anything electronic working absolutely perfectly. I think if it's electronic, it's going to screw up, you know, because I equate electronics sometimes to magic, and the magic can always screw up. And any kind of electronics, I would assume that would happen. I would be more in the thinking, you know, that it is possible if you place the phone at the right angle and have the antenna right near where the circuitry is. And who knows the way they make these things nowadays. I'm finding all kinds of things that you buy are junk. They don't work. They're cheap. And a lot of it comes down to shielding that isn't there or should be there, poor soldering. I've run across a branded TV that three or four of them had the same problem due to bad soldering. So I'm very skeptical, Dick. I would tend to believe it rather than think it's an urban myth or somebody tried to get their 15 minutes of fame, if you know what I mean. I'm not going to try it with my cell phone. I don't know I could. I have an electric stove, and maybe I'll place it there and dial a number and see what happens. But who knows how the stove was made. I think it's possible, and I don't know. Maybe we ought to do like they do on Mythbusters. They'll buy a stove and play with it with a cell phone. Back to
WV2U with a comment.
It sounds like it was Whiskey Victor 2 Uniform with comment. We'll pass it to you in a second. Where you saw it on Channel 4, in other words, NBC local television is what I think you're saying, Bill, and where they did talk about Magic Chef, now I'm beginning to believe it could be real. The chances of a person intentionally pulling a hoax on NBC television are kind of slim. On top of that, Magic Chef, the brand name that was mentioned, if I was the manufacturer of that device and if I thought that there was something wrong with the test itself, I would get on there immediately with a rebuttal. And since you haven't seen a rebuttal on the news, quite possibly it could be a real susceptibility of that particular brand name. Whiskey Victor 2 Uniform, start off with your name, sir, and then your comment. And your audio is a little bit low, so speak a little closer to your mic. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Thanks very much, Dick. My name is Paul, and I also saw the same news report. And I think what it was the cell phone was resting, you know, only about, less than 2 feet away from the control panel, and it was during the ring cycle. And I do believe that when you first ring a cell phone, there is a series of digital conversations that go on, and it's quite possible that the cell phone used full power, especially if he was in a weak area. So, you know, and, you know, those were a touchpad, it looked like, controls, which I know can be susceptible. And, you know, certainly they could be susceptible to RF, you know, especially with that kind of proximity, especially if he was in a fringe area and that cell phone turned on with its full power. How was that transmission? Was that readable? WB2U, back to net.
Very readable, Paul. And I can tell you were talking quite close and loud to your mic, and the audio was still a little bit on the low side. The next time Andy WA2CDL runs a tune-up clinic at any one of the major LIMARC functions, this particular repeater group holds flea markets and things like that where Andy comes along with his test equipment, he could reset the deviation on your particular transmitter, which is a little bit lower than it should be. But, okay, you've seen the same news report that that Bill saw. It's beginning to sound like it's the real thing. And like Bill said, everything has a degree of susceptibility. The only thing left to discuss is how susceptible. Does it require a milliwatt, a kilowatt, or a megawatt of power before the electronics will become disrupted? But almost everything, you put it alongside of a strong enough transmitter. And like you said, the cell phone could be running at high power because the base station is far away, or because the cell phone is against a metallic surface and the antenna is being crippled a little bit, that again could force the cell phone to go to high power. And is it the keyboard itself or the microprocessor or the wiring to it? The wiring that goes to, let's say, the keyboard, every one of those wires represents a little bit of an antenna that can pick up RF energy. And many integrated circuits, when RF energy is on one of their control cables, it will rectify it and derive a direct current voltage, even though the RF energy is an AC signal, and that direct current voltage could flip the logic from the 1 to the 0 mode as if you had pressed a key, so or 0 to a 1 mode, but you know what I mean. So I'm beginning to think this is real. Okay, so we've had a report from Paul and Bill so far. Anyone else has anything further to add on the gas range that turned on its oven when a cell phone was placed, let's say, near the microprocessor for the gas range. Anybody have any further questions or comments? Give me your call. That is right now. K2RIW on the TechNet.
WA2RIW, I have a comment. Do you know if any of these manufacturers ever specify the conductive susceptibility of any of the appliances they build?
Yes, without a doubt, Bill. Bill is asking, do manufacturers of equipment state the susceptibility? In the case of handheld devices made by a number of manufacturers I'm familiar with, one of the usual minimums is 10 volts per meter. Yeah, 10 volts per meter. A number of handheld devices that I'm familiar with, the manufacturer has an internal specification of 10 volts per meter of non-susceptibility, and in some cases they actually put that on the data sheet that's available to you. The number 10 volts per meter is a good number. It's a pretty strong signal compared to the quarter of a microvolt that a good handy talkie will respond to. However, in the old days, when the RF biohazard number used to be 10 milliwatts per square centimeter, that does equal 192 volts per meter. Volts per meter is the E field in space of a transmitted signal. It's not super easy to relate volts per meter back to microvolts being picked up with a particular antenna. There's a bit of a conversion required, but you could roughly say that a dipole at that operating frequency will pick up something in that vicinity. And we could go through the exact mathematics. It's frequency sensitive. A lower frequency dipole, the wire itself of the dipole, when it's halfway resonant, is bigger. Therefore, it picks up more volts for the same number of volts per meter. So as you can see, there's a slightly difficult conversion required between the two. But at VHF frequencies, it comes out pretty close. What you pick up on a dipole and the volts per meter are in the same ballpark. So 10 volts per meter is the number I've often heard quoted. I wonder if you've ever heard any numbers significantly different from that, Joe. WA2RYY, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Yeah, I was just wondering about that because I've seen somebody actually install a high-power HF transceiver in a motor vehicle, and I'm talking about high-power in excess of something like 1,000 to 1,500 watts output. And I told them to be very careful in installing things like that because you can really upset the electronics in a car by having high-power RF in it. And he managed to actually turn the car off while he was driving.
Yeah, that kind of power doesn't surprise me. First of all, the raw power to run a 1,500-watt transmitter is probably coming from the 12-volt power supply. 12 volts, 1,500 watts. If his transmitter was running 50% efficiency, he's really drawing 3,000 watts to do that. 3,000 watts at 12 volts is something like, what, 300 amperes? Yeah. He's drawing almost 300 amperes out of that 12-volt supply from that car in order to do that. It's a rare automobile that can tolerate 300 ampere drain without doing some pretty funny things. Obviously, that wiring had to be direct to the battery. You would never get anywhere near that amount of current out of a cigarette lighter. And rarely does the alternator in a private automobile have more than 100 amperes of charging capability. So if it wasn't for the excess energy being capable of being supplied by the battery, the battery can supply 300 amperes relatively easily when you're running the starter motor. However, the 12 volts or 13 volts out of that battery drops down to something like 9.5 or 10 volts when you're supplying that kind of current to the starter motor, particularly on a cold day. So he's really pushing the envelope here of that kind of power in an automobile. And you're absolutely right. The RF energy, when you're drawing 300 amps from a battery in a car, quite possibly that transmitter is putting a few watts of RF energy back onto that 12-volt wiring. And that 12-volt wiring is in direct contact with other wiring that goes to the microprocessor of the car. So it can easily disturb the oxygen sensor, the fuel mixture sensor for the carburetor, and so on. It can create all kinds of disruption. So you're absolutely right to give him plenty of warning. To shield that transmitter and the antenna, to locate things in the right position so that the RF coupling to the sensitive circuits of the car will not be affected, that represents a serious effort, an art form, very similar to what happens when a guy sets up a 2-meter repeater and he wants maximum sensitivity with a good low-noise preamp. He may have to do quite a bit of relacing of the wiring of his repeater.
Time out.
He may have to do quite a bit of rerouting of the wiring of his repeater system to make sure that he doesn't get descents and other kinds of difficulties. So RF energy, particularly transmitter energy, even as low a transmitter as the few hundred milliwatts that a cell phone can put out, can at times give you funny effects. I think Bill's very right when he said he thinks everything, his way of wording it is every piece of electronics can screw up. Well, I would be a little bit softer in the wiring and in the wording and say that every piece of electronics has some level of susceptibility, whether it be square wave pulses that you put on the 12-volt power supply, or whether it be bursts of RF energy that get into various portions of the circuit. Everything has some level of susceptibility. If the manufacturer has done a real good job, that problem is not going to come up except for one case per thousand where somebody does something very unusual, like putting it alongside of a kilowatt transmitter. Good subject you brought to our attention, Bill. And as all of us look further into it, please come back periodically and let us know what you find out. WB2CUK, the Magic Chef Oven Man, K2RIW in the TechNet.
The K2KEY with a comment.
Yeah, stand by a minute here, Bill. Go ahead, Mel. Does this happen in Brooklyn?
Oh, I heard of a similar case with a person with a pacemaker some years ago at the airport, and they claimed at that time that certain pacemakers, the instrument used to check a person, you know, the wand that they check over a person with, had affected certain pacemakers or defibrillators. And Now, I don't know really what the outcome was, but I understand certain people that had those pacemakers inserted in them would get a doctor's special note from the doctor that preempted them from having to go through that process at the airport, Dick, over.
Yeah, the wand is really a kind of a metal detector, and so the metal detector is going to see the metal case of the pacemaker that's usually buried below a person's chest who's wearing one of those. I'd like to believe that any manufacturer of a pacemaker these days goes through a pretty heroic effort to make the susceptibility an extremely high number. If you give a false alarm to a pacemaker where it does a defibrillator function while your heart is operating normally, that's kind of serious by my standards, because the defibrillator function, if a heart is already beating, the heart pacemaker has to very carefully time when it does its function, otherwise it can do more harm than good. And if that pacemaker is getting phony signals from local RF equipment, it could disturb its ability to do that careful timing, and therefore that could be a potentially dangerous situation. On top of that, I'm worried by the whole scenario, and that is, if a person with a pacemaker carries a special note from his physician telling the Transportation Safety Authority not to do metal detecting in the normal manner on him, that worries me, because I'm afraid that someday some crafty individual is going to use that phenomena to his advantage. I don't think I have to go into the details, but I think you see where I'm going on this one. So that kind of scares me. I guess if I was the TSA at that particular airport, I would do a hell of a lot more than just read that letter from his physician. I'd want a lot more verification that he really is who he says he is, and the equipment he's talking about being on his body really is there, as opposed to something else. Back to you for any further comments on this one, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yes, Roger. If you had that type of special exemption from your doctor for going through the regular detection method, you still would have to then submit to a physical pat-down. You cannot then go through without going through then a regular physical pat-down. That's what you have to submit to. That is part of the agreement with the TSA, Dick, over.
WB2HWW with information.
How we recognize you. That makes sense. So, all right, the guy is not going to be subjected to the wand that does metal detection, but now he's going to be subjected to much more rigorous investigation of another kind. Pat down, if not disrobing, I think might be required. Over to you, Howie, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'm waiting for the carrier. Dick, what happens is this. If you have a guide dog, and when you go through the metal detector, if the guide dog sets it off because his harness, his other stuff, they do pat the dog down. They do a physical inspection, and there's a whole protocol. That's also with medical devices. If you have a guide dog or a prosthesis or something else in your body, then there's a whole other set of rules that they have to follow. And that is TSA and the ADA, which is the Americans with Disability Act. You would come under the ADA laws, Dick. Go ahead.
Very fine, Howie. Glad you brought that to our attention. And I feel a little more comfortable now knowing that the normal modus operandi is a much more thorough investigation of another kind, that a person can't simply use the claim of a pacemaker and the letter that goes along with it as sufficient that he should be bypassing the normal TSA inspection. That makes me feel a lot more comfortable. Look what we got into here, Bill, just because of your cell phone on the on the Magic Chef. W2CUK, KQIIW.
Dick, can I make one more comment here, please?
Yeah, go ahead. Back off very slightly on your audio, Howie, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to assure people they're 100% right. There are certain rules and regulations that they have to follow. You go to the TSA homepage, you can see it. It's for people with disabilities. When you go through, if, you know, they can't separate you from your dog, and when you go through, and if something gets set off, or they, you say, look, the dog is going to set it off, then they will take you aside, and they've done it to me a million times, and they will go through a much more thorough checkout. They will ask your name, and they will do a lot of more stuff. So you're not getting a free pass through the system, but then they have to make accommodations. They have to make, or they have to do workarounds, that's all. Doesn't mean you get a free pass, Dick. KQIIW, WD2HWW.
Very glad to hear that, Howie. Back to you for any final comments, Bill. Look what you got us into, Bill. B2CUK, KQIIW.
All righty, and the only thing, good afternoon to evening to Howie there. The only thing that really caught my ear on it was when they said Magic Chef, because that was one of the first microwave ovens I had, about 30 years ago when I first came out. It was big and huge, and I think it had a dial on. It didn't have digital controls. And that's what caught my ear, said Magic Chef, and then I watched the article, and it was on another station, and I might try that with my cell phone. I'll have to see if it lights my electric oven. The only thing I'm thinking of, when you say touch controls, a lot of the touch controls are capacitive sensitive, where you touch them and it activates it, and some of them have tactile feel. Like the one on my stove, you actually have to press it, and there's like a tactile feel to it, but there are those that you just touch it, and I guess they use the capacitance in your hand. So maybe that's the kind that's very susceptible. I'm going to sign. My wife gave me a half hour of time tonight on the air, and she wants it back. I got to get going. But I'm glad we started a little bit of a conversation here, Dick. 73. And the next HamFest for the fellow who wants his audio adjusted is October 25th at Levittown Hall, the next Limelight show. 73, guys. I'll have one ear on the radio, and the rest of myself is with the wife. 73, WB2CUK, clear. Thanks a lot, Dick.
Very fine, Bill. Thank you for bringing that all to our attention. And hello to Gail. Okay, Jeff is next. WA2, Romeo Alpha Sierra. If I got it right, Jeff, what would you like to discuss tonight? KQIIW, my name is Dick.
Okay, Dick, WA2RAS, very interesting. Just to refresh your memory, I'm the guy that had the problem with the my lawn sprinkler. It kept getting turned on voice peaks, and I think that which we discussed earlier is under control. I think it is. It's a little bit of an ominous sign the other day, but for the most part, that's under control. Something new has cropped up, and even more bizarre, perhaps. The other day, my wife was telling me that when I went on the air, the doorbell kept ringing, and we have the kind of doorbell that plays a melody, and it just kept playing over and over and over as I was transmitting. So I seem to be, it's a wireless doorbell system, so I seem to have doorbell interference also. Is that unusual, Dick, K2RWW2RAS?
Where your doorbell is a wireless type, I see all kinds of ways that can happen. When you get this doorbell ringing or the sprinkler system turning on, roughly how many watts of power are you running into what kind of an antenna? I know you told this before, but refresh my memory here, Jeff. What band are you on? Where's the antenna located? And roughly how many watts are you putting into the antenna? Back to you for those questions, Jeff. Go ahead.
Okay. Now I'm not 100% sure. I had this. I had it all written down somewhere, and I seem to have misplaced the piece of paper that I wrote it down on. But I believe it's happening on 80 meters with fairly high power. This is the amplifier that I was using kicks out about 400 watts output PEP. It's going to a dipole, but I don't think anyway that it's the antenna, because you know I have it's an older rig. It's a Heathkit amplifier. I do have a state of the art rig, which is even more power than that's 1,000 watts out or more, and you know on the state of the art rig. And amplifier, it doesn't happen using the same antenna, Dick.
Interesting. Now, the dipole, the 80-meter dipole, is the coax cable going straight to the dipole, center conductor to one side, shield to the other side, or is there really an RF choke there, a rolled up few turns of coax cable, or a balancing device? One way or another, is there a balancing device at the dipole? And the reason I'm asking that question, Jeff, if there isn't one, then by definition, a certain amount of your watts of RF energy, after going down the coax cable and hitting the dipole, would then be coming back down the outside of the shield of the coax cable. And now, with that coax cable coming back into the house, radiating into the wiring and anything else that comes near, would be aggravating the problem. So is there a balancing device on that dipole, Jeff? Go ahead.
No. There is no balancing device of any type on the dipole. But also, just so you have the whole picture here, Dick, the Durbo system is not wired into anything. There's a battery in the ringer, the batteries in the reception units. I've got three of them, so it rings all over the house. And again, if it was the antenna, you know, if it was RF coming back down the line, why wouldn't that be happening with the more powerful amplifier, the state of the art amplifier, Dick?
Dick, if he's got more than one ringer, we should know how all the ringers going off, or just one of them.
And what frequency are they operating on?
Yeah, there's a thank you. That was Barry. And Barry, your audio could be a little bit louder, but. Where you say everything is battery operated, Jeff, I'm amazed by that. I'm amazed that the ringers aren't plugged into a wall wart that keeps that particular power supply charged. To run the ringers of your house on batteries, as well as the button that you push, running on a battery, I can see that. But the ringer itself running on a battery, and three of them around the house, do they all ring at once? Do they all when somebody presses the doorbell, do they all ring at once? Do you happen to know what frequency they're on? It might help. And even though they might be thoroughly isolated, meaning that there's no wall wart powering any of them, they really are thoroughly battery operated, still, the lack of a balance at the dipole does make your coax cable hot. The coax cable hot has much more opportunity to couple one way or another into the wiring of your house. The wiring of your house becomes an antenna, and quite possibly some of those ringers are located in a place in your house where there is house wiring nearby. So now you have a very close coupling mechanism that can aggravate the whole situation. So do you happen to know what frequency your bells are on? And as I said, I agree with you. It's a mystery that your higher power transmitter doesn't seem to do it. So what frequency are they on, and do they all ring at once with the RF energy? Back to you, Jeff.
Okay. First, I don't know. Offhand what frequency the doorbell is operating on. Perhaps I might have some paperwork that I could find, you know, that would have that information. As far as if all of them are ringing at this, okay, when if the doorbell is operating normally, of course they all ring, pretty close to simultaneously. Actually, they're not totally in sync. They're a little bit out of phase with each other. It's just kind of annoying because they're playing a tune, so you hear, you know, sort of like the row, row, row your boat kind of thing, you know, with other people chiming in, only this is a doorbell. But I don't know whether the doorbell interference is impacting all three units or just one. It's certainly affecting the one in the bedroom, which is right by my wife's ear. That one definitely triggered, but I'm not sure about the other two, Dick.
Yeah, sometimes on the label of a piece of equipment, they'll tell you what frequency it operates on. Hopefully your paperwork will give you a clue. And if not, we may have to find out by some other means. Now, where you're really not connected to the household wiring, obviously the usual ferrite bead is not going to work. I guess the possibility exists that the battery is acting like an antenna, and its wiring into the rest of the electronics is coupling the RF energy in. You may have to actually dig into this particular circuit and put in a 1,000 picofarad, a 0.001 disc ceramic capacitor.
Dick, you ought to try just moving the unit to another part of the room.
That's another good suggestion. Barry, you could use some more audio. But, yes, if you just move the bell wherever it is, that's a good suggestion to Barry. It's a very simple one. If it's on the north wall of your bedroom, move it to the south wall or the east wall, if you know what I mean. That's worth a try, particularly if the others are not being triggered by the transmitter. That's the easiest one. But you'd like to really nick the problem in the bud, so to speak, and you may have to dig in there and put in disc ceramic capacitors that the manufacturer should have put in, but he's saving 10 cents at a time by leaving components out. So there's an amazing number of telephones and phonographs and things like that out there that are quite susceptible to amateur transmitters. Don't know what else to suggest to you, but do give it a try of putting it on another wall. Back to you, Jeff. WA2RAS, K2RIW.
Okay, there you go.
Comment.
Okay, we got both Eric and Mel in that order. Stand by, Jeff. Eric, what would you do in this case? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
I just wanted to let it drop. I actually have a couple of doorbells. Mine works on 13 megahertz. I think they're the same frequency as the RFID, but they all have some coding in it so you can have multiple buttons and multiple bells and be associated with each other. But after listening to this, he says his modern rig, which probably has a nice DC supply in it to power his output transistors, doesn't have the problem with it. And he's got an old heat kit where he has the problem. I'm wondering if it occurs on any other band in 80 meters. 80 and 160 are insidious because of the long wavelengths of getting into everything. But it sounds to me like it's, you ought to, you know, either get rid of the old radio or clean up the power supply because he's lighting up the house with his wiring. You know, it's coming back through the AC is what I'm hearing. And I've seen that kind of thing where you actually have to take a whole bunch of chokes and literally put it on the line cord, try and keep the stuff from getting into the wall. You may have a good antenna system. It sounds like you've got an unbalanced antenna system, which isn't fun to start with, but, the bell and even the microprocessor of the sprinkler system, he's generating some voltages in his stuff there. So it sounds like I don't want to live in that house with all that RF energy there. Back to you, Dick. K2RW, K2J.
Yeah, but you're not a guy that lives in Bayville. The Bayville people need some further education that RF is safe. And the amount of RF that gets from his antenna, when you put a kilowatt, let's say, into an 80-meter dipole, you could stand a foot away from that dipole, and you would be safe for about three reasons. One, as you get down to a frequency like 3.5 megacycles, the RF energy, 90-some-odd% of it, flows through you with no effect. It's only when you get up to the VHF frequencies, 30 to 300, where a substantial...
Hey, diaphragm is at 27 megahertz.
Understand. That's a good point. Diaphragmy, you've got these two pads that go directly across your knee, your leg, your arm, or whatever, and you're creating an extremely strong local E field with the way you set it up.
Yeah, it's about 200 watts.
There you go. And by the same token, you could convince yourself that 24 or 50 megacycles is a very dangerous frequency because that's where your microwave oven works.
All right, I didn't mean to get you started here.
But the microwave oven is doing something very specific to create extreme concentration. Your diathermy machine creates extreme concentration. I would feel very safe in Jeff's house. I don't care if he's putting 1,500 watts into that antenna without a ballon and the coax cable is hot. That frequency, 3.5 megs, and the amount of real E-field that he could be getting is way below the threshold of alarm when it comes to radio frequency biohazard. So I know you were kidding when you're saying you would worry about the RF in that house. However, he does have some susceptible electronics. Let's see what Mel's got to say about all this. K2KEY, what would you do about this one, Mel? K2RIW.
Well, let me just throw this in here. My only problem in my house, and I tend to run a bit of power and low power at times, is that I have computers that turn themselves on. And I've actually measured what does it, and it's just a certain amount of RF, and it's being detected, you know, as it gets picked up. And what happens is, like the on-off switch, when we connect it to a Schmidt trigger, it sees anything that looks anything like a square wave, it just turns on. So, you know, even if low amounts of RF will do that kind of stuff, take your handy talkie and just put it in front of another radio and click it on and off and listen to it. Things of that nature. It doesn't take a lot of power, but it really sounds like he's radiating through his power line. And as far as my not wanting to be there, I was really kind of only kidding, but I can just imagine all the other devices that are picking it up and doing things like that.
Yeah, that
would be interesting. Why, what a suggestion.
Joe recognized. We'll go to you right after Mel, who's on the list. When I operate my handy-talkie anywhere near my computer, I hear some funny effects coming out of the loudspeakers that are connected to my computer. So my loudspeakers connected to my computer are quite susceptible to the 2-meter energy, even when I'm running the low-power mode, the 100-milliwatt mode, out of my IC2AT. Yes, I am running an old 20-year-old, let's see, 1985? Wow. 95? Yeah, 24 years old. A 24-year-old handy-talkie I still use. Mel's got much more modern equipment, though. K2KEY, go ahead, Mel. K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Let's get back to his equipment that he's using. Number one, does he have an antenna tuner in the line? That's number one. That's question number one. Number two, I'll tell you, because 75 meters gave me some grief at times with some unusual problems that I didn't expect to have at 75 meters. And the best way I found to get rid of all the problems I had is when I went to the open wire, 600 ohm open wire feed, into the balanced input of the tuner. That seemed to just about clear up all the screwball problems I was having on, especially 75 meters. As far as the amplifier, the EastKit SB200, SB220 series, I serviced a couple of them. And one of the problems was with them, they had failures of those suppressor chokes that are on the plate caps of the tubes, whether they're using the 200 series was with the 811s or the 220 series with the 3-500. Those suppressors had a tendency to fail and create some problems. Because looking on the spectrum analyzer, I saw some real problems in those amplifiers, Dick. So That most likely is his problem, that why he, when he uses the old Heathkit amplifier, it gives him some grief, but he doesn't get it on a newer rig, newer amplifier, that's even running higher power over.
Yeah, quite possibly a harmonic coming out of the lower power rig is aggravating the electronics of the doorbell circuit. Someone predicted that it might be running on 13 megacycles. I'm a bit skeptical of that. There are RFID tags and things like that that run on 13 megs, but they're the so-called contact type. They only operate within 1 foot. To make a good, efficient antenna at 13 megacycles and as small a circuit as the bell push button would be very difficult. I am guessing it's more likely operating on a VHF frequency. In any case, the harmonics coming out of the lower power rig could be aggravating it. Mel's suggestion to be using an antenna tuner is a beautiful way of getting rid of a lot of the harmonics, because that's a high Q bandpass filter, an antenna tuner. And so right now, as you can tell, Jeff, our best guess is that your higher power rig is of a better design where it has less harmonics coming out of it. That's a possible guess. Let's see what Joe's got to say about all this. I wonder if you've ever run anything like this one, Joe. W2RYY, K2RIW.
I have info too.
No, I haven't had that happen as an interference problem, but here's a simple suggestion. If you're saying one transmitter produces an interference type of scenario and another transmitter does not produce it on the same antenna, take the other transmitter that does not produce it and run it at the same power level as the first transmitter. Have you thought of trying that and see if that would cause the thing to actually react in the same way? Because maybe it's purely an RF radiated problem from the antenna, and when the device sees below a certain level or above a certain level, it doesn't react. But at one particular critical level, it reacts and does crazy things.
Interesting suggestion. So one of them is a 400-watt transmitter, and one's a 1,000-watt or 1,500-watt. And the 1,000-watt or 1,500-watt doesn't do it. If it was cut back to 400, would it do it? Good suggestion. I still think he's going to get the biggest bang for the dollar by moving it to the other wall, which was... let me think now. Who was that? N2MB. That was Barry's suggestion. The other person who says, I have info too, I didn't recognize the voice. I should have, though. Who was it that said that? Go ahead.
Hi, Dick. Good evening. It's WW2WW. I install a lot of doorbells and door chimes and things like that in my business, and most of your doorbells and door chimes work on 315 or 433 megahertz.
That makes a lot more sense. 315 or 430 makes a lot more sense, because at those frequencies, relatively small circuitry in the push button mechanism can give you a reasonable antenna. To try to squeeze a good antenna in there at 13 megacycles would be an extremely difficult problem to make a good one. They'd end up with 1% transmitting efficiency, and therefore the receiver would have to have super sensitivity, and that in itself would create all kinds of problems. Okay, so it's a VHF frequency, so the harmonics coming out of the rig near 315 or 430 could be a factor. And so even a ham radio type low-pass filter, quite a few guys run one of these 30 megacycle low-pass transmitting filters on their transmitter. That would help. So we got a number of suggestions there, as you can tell, Jeff. Filtering, moving, and whatever. As you go further with this particular problem, please come back and let us know what you find, because you got a couple guys on the edge of their seat on this one. W2RAS, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay. K2RAS. Very good. But to answer a question that came up about the tuner, not only do I have a tuner, I have two tuners. There's one tuner between the exciter and the amplifier, and there's another tuner, obviously, between the amplifier and the and the antenna. That's because the rig that I'm using as the exciter has to see a very, very, very low SWR, or it gets upset. great suggestions. It dawns on me, you know, you would think I would have figured this out myself, but, you know, that there is, to the unit that was definitely firing, that was definitely going off. I'm not sure about the other two, but the one that was definitely going off is in close proximity to the actual antenna. So, you know, perhaps just by moving it, I could solve the problem. But, you know, I hadn't thought about a low-pass filter. That's a good idea also. Guitar WWA2RAS, very helpful.
Into MPJ. MPJ recognized. Let me write that one down before I forget it. The antenna tuner you're running on the exciter to the final, and another antenna tuner between the final and the antenna, my goodness, you're reasonably well filtered as I see it. I'm beginning to think it's more likely simple, close proximity RF overload more than harmonic energy. But still, you never know. Mr. MPJ, go right ahead. I should know your name, K2RIW.
Yeah, name is Bob. Do we know whether it is the push buttons that are being triggered or the bell unit that's being triggered? And is there any way to isolate the two?
I would guess yes. If it was the push button being triggered, another very good suggestion, as I see it, Bob, then all three bells would be ringing. He only has evidence so far.
Take the battery out of the push button.
Yep, that's a way to test it. He's got two ways to test it. If it's a push button being triggered, it will, by definition, trigger all three ringers. So he can find out how many ringers are ringing. He can follow Eric's suggestion to remove the battery in the push button, and that way see if they still ring. We've given you quite a bit of a homework assignment here, as you can tell, Jeff. Lots and lots of suggestions. Before I close up on this subject, last chance, anyone else want to make some further suggestions to Jeff on his... what would you call it now? Let's see. Television interference is called TVI. Telephone interference, that's also TVI.
PHI.
Phonograph interference would be PFI. Bell interference, BFI. He's got BFI. Okay, anyone else with any further suggestions, give us your call letters right now.
WA2CKP.
WA2CKB, start up your name and your suggestion, sir.
Name is Bob. I'd have them all play solo. Solo, you can't hear them.
8 o'clock.
Good night, Dick.
My goodness, that guy's got a good sense of humor. Okay. So, Jeff, please come back and let us know what you find. WA2RAS for any of the finals, K2RIW.
These are great, great suggestions, and sometimes the simplicity, it amazed myself why I couldn't think of any of these things. Yeah, the idea of to isolate the problem and just pull the battery out of the. Anyway, it's very, very, very good, very helpful. I'll let you know what happens. WA2RAS.
We'll be looking forward to that, Jeff. Okay, the next person on my list is Joe. Joe didn't think we'd have time to get to him, and he's only an hour downrange. We've got 2.5 hours ahead of you, Joe. We can have a grand old time on your subject. WA2RYY, K2RIW.
It is, of course, going to be a good one. I have a cable TV leak that I have detected actually coming across the street from me, from my house, and I detected this by scanning analog channels and actually finding that up in the UHF spectrum that I actually can see some TV channels coming from a neighbor's house. I walked over to the house with a portable television set, a Sony Walkman, and I get to one corner of the house, which happens to be where the cable drops coming down. I can actually see quite a viewable picture on the Sony Walkman. My question is, can that device be used with some reliability to give the cable company some information if they're looking for something? How you measured or something like that, because I'm looking, I guess, for the fields. What I don't know is the field strength receiving ability of this device or what it's actually rated for. And I don't know what the cable company or what their ratings actually go for as far as on different frequency bands of how many microvolts per meter is allowed by FCC limits. But any thoughts on something like this?
Eric? Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Let me tell you, when I was 18, and I was working for a guy that owned a